Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Wellington Access Radio, 106.1. My name is Dan and I'm an alcoholic. Can you say hi, everyone?
Hi, Dan.
Oh, hi, everyone. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on here. So we'll start as we always do with the Serenity Prayer. So if you'd like to all join me. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Fantastic. All right. So I'll read the preamble now to Alcoholics Anonymous. It explains a little bit about what AA is and what it isn't. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And so in the studio this morning, we've got Spiritual Concepts, one of the more popular groups in Wellington, in terms of numbers and sobriety. So that meeting is on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. in Roseneath. So it's a very nice meeting. So what they normally do is they start off by reading a part of the AA Big Book. Now, is it page 568 that we start off with? 569, is it? I knew it was close. So what I'll do is I'll read that and then we can start some sharing. So 569. It's called Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book. Is that right? Oh, no.
Yep.
Which, upon careful reading, shows that a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes, or religious experiences, must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience, and more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. And it finishes with a quote from Herbert Spencer. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. So that was a reading from the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, and that was called Appendix 2, The Spiritual Experience. So what we'll do is we'll start with the sharing. So, Jess, would you like to share first?
Hi, my name's Jess, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jess.
As Dan said, Sunday Spiritual Concepts is my home group, and it's the best meeting in the Southern Hemisphere. I guess I took my first drink when I was 18 years old, so quite a late starter by most measures. But, you know, I was having my 18th birthday, which I'd planned out quite carefully. It was going to be at my boyfriend's parents' house, and we had a strobe light and a smoke machine in the shed, and it was really exciting, you know, but I don't, aside from awkwardly introducing my parents, I don't remember much more until my boyfriend's dad was holding back my hair as I was vomiting off the balcony. So I guess that really typifies my drinking experience for the next 10 years. I blacked out very frequently when I drank. When I started drinking, I felt as though I couldn't stop, or just all reason left me. I tried lots of different things towards the end of my drinking. Well, I think probably the whole way through my drinking. At one point we convinced ourselves that drinking water with vodka, not a sugary mixer, would hydrate us at the same time, so we wouldn't get a hangover and we wouldn't get as drunk as fast. So we used to order big jugs of water and vodka at this bar. Needless to say, that didn't work. And, you know, I used to go to lots of BYOs with my friends because that was just kind of a part of the way we socialised. And I would try not to get drunk. I would buy low-alcohol wine. I would say that I'd split a bottle of wine with my friends. But, you know, I would end up finishing up other people's bottles of wine, or being greedy and drinking a whole bottle of wine that I was meant to share. You know, none of my best efforts worked in any way, shape or form. I still couldn't stop myself from blacking out every time I drank and drinking, and until I couldn't remember anything, until I would be doing things that I would regret the next morning, you know, waking up and checking your bank balance, checking your text messages, checking your outgoing calls, you know, it's just a nightmare. And I felt like I couldn't stop myself, you know. But the other thing was, I was in a huge amount of denial. I didn't realize that alcohol was the problem. You know, I thought one day that if I tried hard enough, I'd grow up and I'd be able to drink like everyone else. But, I mean, alcohol was the problem, but underneath I was really broken and spiritually sick and looking for something to fill the void in my life. So it took a couple of goes to get sober. The first time, I stayed sober for about 8 months after getting so drunk and wandering the streets by myself that someone, a stranger, drove me home. Luckily for me, someone kind. And I woke up and thought, oh my God, I just can't keep doing this. It must be the alcohol. So I stopped drinking for 8 months, and it was actually torture. I didn't have AA. I didn't have a program. I didn't have anything to support myself during that time. And at the end, when it came around to Christmas, I thought, hey, you know, I've been sober 8 months, I can drink again, it'll be fine. And you know what? It was not fine. It was just the same, if not worse. I couldn't stop drinking once I started. So I had a few more months of drinking before I called on the help of a friend who I knew was sober, but I didn't know that they were in AA. And the first thing that he said to me was, you need to get to an AA meeting. So he was very kind and arranged for a friend of his, a woman, to come and pick me up and take me to my first meeting. And I haven't had a drink since then. That was 3.5 years ago now. You know, what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is, you know, fellowship, having people that are going through the same thing, going through that withdrawal, grieving. You know, your relationship with alcohol is your primary one when you're an alcoholic, and you need to grieve the loss of that relationship. But you also need to start working on your spiritual self and start building a new life. And having people who have gone through that before surrounding you and helping you along the way is the best way forward. I mean, everyone said to me, if you want what we have, then do what we do. And I just wanted my life to be better, and I just didn't want to be in so much pain. So I kept doing what they said I should do, which was coming back to meetings, getting a sponsor, getting a home group, and doing the steps. And, you know, life just keeps getting better. It's not easy. There are so many challenges, but life is just amazing. I'm so happy that I'm alive, for one thing, but that I'm on this journey with everyone. Yeah, I can't explain to you how grateful I am for finding this program and for being sober today. So I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks, Jess. Thanks. Okay, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air with Spiritual Concepts Group in the studio. So if you're listening and you want to get in touch with AA, there's an easy way to do that. AA.org.nz is our website. On there, there's lots of information about alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a list of meetings, and there's also a list of these meetings on air as well. So from the website, if you hover over meetings and get into meetings on air and click on it, it comes up with a list of downloadable and listenable items, and they're all meetings on air. So you can listen to more and more of these wherever you are, as long as you've got internet access. And there's a phone number as well in New Zealand, which is 0800 229 6757, and in most areas of New Zealand that number will be answered by a sober alcoholic who knows a little bit about AA and may be able to answer some questions you might have and perhaps even direct you to a meeting. So yeah, that's a little bit about how to get in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous. So now I think I might move on, and we'll ask the next person to share. So, Rach, would you like to share?
Yeah, I'm Rachel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rachel.
I can relate with relate to a lot of what Jess was talking about then. I'm 10 months sober now. It's not been an easy 10 months, but it's not the first time I've been through recovery. It's my second time through AA, the first time I entered AA, my drinking was very obviously very dangerous. My behaviour was out of control with alcohol. Life was all about the party. That's all I wanted to do, was party, and that's how it was from when I started drinking. I've managed to get educated, I've managed to get a job and function, but that party was always my priority, and drinking was always my priority. That sounds great, but in reality, it soon goes horribly wrong, because you hurt people, and your behaviour is actually frequently disgusting and socially unacceptable. And I would drink until I was sick, and I would drink until I blacked out. And some of the life choices I made were unwise, to say the least. and I got myself into some trouble over the time. But it was never trouble, or hardly ever trouble with the police, and I didn't get into fights or things like that. I probably caused a couple of fights, but I didn't get into any myself. And so I could pretend that, you know, everything was fine, and I was just a heavy drinker. I just liked to have fun. And but, you know, it really wasn't. I was drink driving. I was being sick in blackout, which is really dangerous. And yeah, the predicaments you get into, I think particularly as a drunk woman, is you're quite vulnerable, and it's a dangerous place to be. So that first time into AA, it was an easy decision because my behaviour was so out of control. And I got a few years of sobriety, and I went from being a notorious sort of party girl, with not much respect in the community I lived in, to being, sort of more of a pillar of society, I suppose. And I became a mother during that time, and I lived in a really nice house professionally. Things were going really well. So I thought I was fine, and I stopped going to meetings. And when I stopped going to meetings, I eventually started drinking again. And this time I became a solo mum of a couple of kids, which meant that party couldn't happen. So my drinking then became the sort of sad, lonely drinking of a woman drinking on her own at home. And so then the danger is of a different sort, because there's mental illness, there's depression, and I've frequently sort of felt very suicidal with my drinking when it was on my own, and because that's shameful in a different way. It's sort of like the behaviour of a party girl is kind of shameful, but when you're drinking on your own, there's a sad loneliness about it that's shameful too. And I could kid myself that I wasn't harming anybody, but you still, you know, I harmed myself. I was harming my children, not physically or emotionally or anything. But I wasn't present for them, as I am now, you know. And eventually I found myself living with a man who I married, and I thought my drinking was in moderation. I thought I'd cracked this drinking mark. I thought I was drinking to a point that was normal, until my husband turned around and said, I'm really worried about your drinking. I think you've got a problem. And he could illustrate it by saying, how many times do you say, right, I'm just going to drink at the weekends, and then Monday you get home from work and you open a bottle of wine? It's like, when have you ever done that not drinking during weekdays thing that you say you're going to do every week? And the answer is never. I might manage a couple of days, but that was it. And so to me, I was giving myself a pat on the back that I was drinking normally, but I wasn't. I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink normally. I don't drink normally. I got enough education about alcoholism to realise that I needed to be back in AA. I also grew up with alcoholic parents, and I wanted something better for my children than the childhood I received. So that was a good incentive to get back to AA. And since I've got back, I haven't had any alcohol, and I'm working through the steps. And it's And those steps are intimidating, and I know that the God thing is intimidating for a lot of people, and that's what puts people from going to AA. But, you know, I don't necessarily believe in a guy with a white beard sitting cross-legged on a cloud looking after me. For me, it's more of a force of energy that is holding me up, and I think you can put any name or face onto that energy and call it God, and that's okay. And so, yes, life has transformed very quickly. In early sobriety, it got worse, and then it got better, and it's been getting better and better and better ever since. And in my workplace and in my home, I don't think I've ever been happier than I am 10 months into sobriety. And I realise that life is going to continue to have its ups and downs, but I've got a clarity of thinking now, and a wellness, a buzzword at the moment, this wellness now, that I didn't have when I was drinking. I'm able to do things with the kids without resenting them that they're cutting into my drinking time. And I haven't had a row with my husband for ages, and we used to row all the time. So it's done wonders for my relationships too. So I don't know if people are listening to this and they're wondering whether they have a problem, come to a meeting, because it's life changing and it can only be for the better. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel. So you're listening to Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. So, yeah, we also have a Facebook page for this radio show, and it's called AA On Air Wellington. Ever so often we get messages from people that are listening, and sometimes those people aren't in Wellington. They might be in Christchurch, or in China, or in Israel, or in the US. And so it's really nice that this little radio show in a little a community radio studio in Wellington carries the message to other people in Wellington, but also far and wide around the country, around New Zealand and around the world. So we welcome messages, and sometimes if we get a message, we read it out, and of course we're very aware of the anonymity of the people that are listening, so we don't read any second names out. We'll just read out the first name and maybe an initial, and perhaps where that person's from. So, yeah, if you're listening, you'd like to send us a message, then we welcome that. So let's keep this hearing going then. So Sophie, would you like to share?
Thanks, Dan. Hi, I'm Sophie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sophie.
Yeah, I identified a lot with Rachel's story. Thinking about my history of drinking, it was problematic since I started drinking. And I can reflect back over years of really risky behaviour. But in the last 10 years, it was very lonely drinking. And particularly, I'd say, in the last 5 years of my drinking, it was like Groundhog Day. So I'd wake up each morning and I'd tell myself I was an alcoholic. And I'd drag myself to work with a hangover. But by the time I left work, it was straight to the supermarket. I'd buy a bottle of wine. I would take a couple of gulps in the car park, and then I'd have to stop halfway home because I was on a motorbike and couldn't drink on a motorbike, so I'd stop halfway home, drink a bit more, and then get home and half the bottle's gone. I'd finish that, I'd get the next bottle, and the world becomes very small and very lonely. And it got to a point that I didn't socialise when I was drinking because people didn't drink enough. So I'd have wine and get out of there so I could drink as much as I wanted to on the way at home on my own. And I also, it affected my work, so I was constantly behind in things, and so I'd be at home thinking, well, I'll just get all this done. And when I get my life sorted out in terms of work and everything else and exercise, then I can deal with my drinking. It didn't occur to me to do it the other way around. It wasn't until I was at the point of losing everything that I decided I had to stop. And having told myself I was an alcoholic, I had to actually believe it and do something about it. And I was, before this meeting, I was talking to Rachel. I used to live about 3 minutes walk away from the studio in a lovely apartment, quite expensive. View over the harbour of Wellington, 5 minutes walk to all the things you want to be around in Wellington City. But I wasted it. By this time on a Saturday morning, I would have been drinking. The groundhog day during the week was going to work. On the weekends it would be getting up and having a coffee and saying, I'm going to get my work done, I'm going to do this, that and the other. But straight after the coffees, I'd be opening a bottle of wine to feel better, and that would be the weekend. So it was a waste of having such a nice apartment right in the middle of town, because all I did was lay on the couch and drink alcohol and look out at the world. So it's nice to be kind of in the world now, even if I don't live there anymore. My recovery's been, I was thinking about the reading spiritual concepts. And my spiritual development has definitely been one of the educational variety. It's taken me quite a time to develop my idea of a spiritual experience. And I know I've been in the rooms for about 2 years now, but I haven't quite got a year up in sobriety yet, because I have lapsed. And I know that happens when I move away from living a spiritual life, and when I stop going to meetings, or when I believe I'm in control of my life. So this morning I did my prayer as I do each morning now. And my idea of a spiritual being, I guess, it's about living in harmony, or being in flow with life, rather than butting heads with it. And I took an idea from Buddhism, as a book I'm reading on Buddhism and the 12 Steps of Recovery too, that... So I get up and ask to let me be in harmony with my ecosystem, whatever that is around me, and be honest, present, mindful and loving, to do my best, take right action and leave the results to a higher power, thy will, not mine, and to engage with the community, helping both the individual and the group. And that's what keeps me, that kind of sets up my day, how I want to behave for the day. And I've gone completely blank with what I was going to say next. It's great to be here sitting in a little studio in an AA meeting, rather than sitting on my couch on my own. And I think that is just a lovely feeling right here and now, and to be amongst people I couldn't imagine of being sitting around talking to about alcoholism on a day like that. So great to be here, and I would encourage anyone who's even thinking that they have an issue with alcohol is just give the helpline a ring. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Sophie.
Thanks, Sophie.
Okay, you're still on 106.1 FM, but Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. If you'd like to get in touch with AA, the website is aa.org.nz. There's lots of information there about Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a way to find out where the meetings are. So from aa.org.nz, if you hover over meetings, then you can go to print meetings list, or there's an option for meeting map. If you click on that, you select the area of the country that you would like to look at, anywhere in New Zealand, and it provides you with a map of the different meetings in the different areas on any given day of the week. So, if you want to find a meeting, if you've got internet access and you can go into aa.org.nz, there's no excuse for you. You can just jump on there and find one in your area and go along. And we Weird Alcoholics Anonymous always welcome newcomers, and often if you're a visitor, you can come along as well. So if you're in any doubt or you've got any questions, then there's a free phone number to call for Alcoholics Anonymous. That number is 0800 229 6757. So, and that's answered in most areas of the country as well. So that's again the number again, 0800 229 6757. All right, Andrew, would you like to share?
Yes, thanks, Dan. Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, I don't know. I found alcohol at a very, very early age. I was 7. I was at a party with my father, and I could always drink fast. And my uncle was going on about how quickly he could drink beer, and my dad bet him that me drinking orange juice and him drinking beer, that I would beat him, and I did. And my uncle said, well, why don't you give him a beer and I'll race him then? And something happened. I had that glass of beer and I just loved it. I loved the feeling. I loved the fact that I started to fit in with people, that anything that was in my head was slowly being switched off. And I thought I'd found my place. And then I didn't drink again until I was 14. And I struggled. I really struggled. I pinched some alcohol at a party when I was 14. And there she was again. That amazing feeling. I'd spent my whole life not fitting in. And I had a beautiful family, a loving family. But I just didn't fit in. And at 16, I found my first drug of choice. Her name was Anne, and she made me feel the way alcohol would later make me feel, and that she made me feel part of. We started a relationship at 16, and at 42, that relationship was over. In between times, we had 3 beautiful kids. And I had grown into a binge drinker, where I would drink once or twice a year, and I would drink to excess, and I'd go out on a Friday and not come home till a Sunday or Monday. I would go out for someone's birthday, someone's party. I would start drinking, and then when they went home, I just found new best friends. I found people who drank like me and just hung out with them. Ended up in all sorts of weird places, sometimes alone, sometimes with other people that I felt like I'd known my whole life. And then I'd sober up and swear that I would never do that again. It was one of my favourite phrases. That's it, never again. 6 months later, there I was again. You know, and that went on for many, many years. And, you know, I separated at 42, and I became a daily drinker. I had no one stopping me from drinking. And I drank for the next 18 months, just every single day. There wasn't a day off. And that ended up in a suicide attempt, because everything that I had was now gone. Every friend I had was gone. Every relationship I had with my family was gone. I had a mother that still loved me but didn't want to talk to me, didn't want anything to do with me. I had sisters and brothers that loved me but had put me at arm's length because they just did not know who they were going to be dealing with. I stopped drinking because my son came and saw me and told me that if I don't stop, you're going to lose me and his sisters. And he had that courage, and it felt like a knife piercing my heart, so I stopped. 6 months later, I found myself with a bottle of bourbon, a handgun, and a party to go to, where I just caused extreme havoc, sunk a boat. Police were involved, very angry man. That's because I'd been 6 months without alcohol, and then I drank that whole bottle of bourbon. I can't remember a bit of it. The next day, it was the 7th of September 2011, I woke up, and what the people had told me I'd done scared me enough to reach out for help. I reached out for help through the Salvation Army. I went and saw a counsellor there every Monday for 4 weeks, and at the end of that 4 weeks, she said to me, Andrew, you've still got a big drink in you. And I was, I went, no, I'm fine. And she said, I want you to come into our in-house program. And I said, I'm way too busy. And she said, Andrew, you're on the dole. And I went, no, but my life's about to change. I'm about to get my wife back, my kids back. The dog will stop barking at me. And, you know, I just want my life back. And she said, if you've got any sort of hope, go to AA. So I did. I started coming to AA. I found one meeting a week in Auckland. And I made that meeting my home group. And for the next 6 months, I started to go mad because I wasn't doing anything. I was just doing one meeting a week. I didn't want anything to do with what they were trying to do. I'd speak out loudly in meetings and I'd be abusive and I was just an angry man. And I remember turning to my sponsor, and a sponsor is someone who takes you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, who has been through them before you. I turned to my sponsor and said to him, yeah, this program isn't working. And he said, good, why don't you try ours? So I did. I started doing multiple meetings a week. In fact, he wanted me to do a meeting a day for 90 days. And I thought that was extremely unreasonable and I should get a new sponsor. But I started to do that. And what happened was I started to put down the groundwork of what would be, you know, I'm now over 7 years sober. And you need that. You need that strong foundation. I didn't come in here looking for God or for a higher power. I just wanted my family back. And what I do have now is I have three amazing children that speak to me regularly. I was talking to my son, you know, in the middle of the night last night, who lives on the other side of the world. I have daughters that, you know, ring me for advice, and I ring them for advice. A whole family that speaks to me. I started going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is recommended, and I started to take responsibility for my own actions. I can remember being very angry one day. I had someone who hadn't paid me. I'd worked on his boat for 100 hours, and he hadn't paid me, and I got very angry, and I rung a friend and said, that's it, I've had enough. I'm going down to drill holes in the bottom of his boat and sink his boat, which is kind of a theme for my thinking. But he just said to me, well, once you've done that, why don't you come around and tell me how you feel? And I got very angry again, because that's how I cope with stuff. And I went round there. And what I was after is, I was after the drama, and I wanted him to buy into it. And he wouldn't. And that's when stuff started to change for me. You know, that inner belief that everything is going to be okay. I had some experiences around that you know, I want to share around. I got home. I got to that. It was the 90th day to do that 90 meetings in 90 days. And I got home and it was raining and it was cold and it was dark outside. And I turned everything on and I put my tea in the microwave. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do the 90 and 90. I'm going to stay at 89. I don't want to be one of those people that does 90 and 90. And I remember looking up at the ceiling and saying, and I don't know what you're going to do about it. And all of a sudden, everything just went pitch black. And I ran out the door, jumped in my car, and went to that meeting. Now, that may not be a sign of God to anybody else, but it sure as hell was for me that day. And I say God because I don't know anybody else called God. For me, it is a God of my own understanding. And he is very present in my life. I'm not afraid to say that. I can't believe I'm sitting in a studio talking on a radio telling people about the God that I have in my life, because that is not what this guy talks about. You know, I had another experience that I like to share, where I was about 4 years sober. I had friends who were heading off down to the South Island, and they wanted me to take them in to pick up their car that they were hiring. And so I did. You know, I went and picked them up. I cleaned my car out to get all their stuff in. It was a company car, and it was full of company petrol. Took them into town, and I found myself sitting there with $60 in my pocket, thinking maybe I should have a drink. And as I got to the traffic lights after dropping them off, I said, God, can you remove this obsession? Because I'll just drink. You know, I knew I could get away with it. My flatmate was away for the weekend. And as I went around the corner, there were a couple of hitchhikers. And I said, thank you, God. And I stopped and picked them up. And I was thinking, this is just going to be awesome. I'm a little bit crazy. I've got a car, company car full of company petrol. I don't need to be anywhere for 4 hours, so I can take them 2 hours out of town and be back to go to the AA meeting at 7 o'clock that night. I can just, you know, they're going to have to listen to me because they're going to be stuck in the car traveling at 100 k's an hour. And they get into the car, and I go to introduce myself, and one of them passes me a card, and it says, we are French and we are deaf. And I was going, what? What is this about? You know, he pulled out a map and he circled the airport and he drew a plane and he wrote France on it. So I kind of figured they needed to get to the airport. And as I'm driving to the airport, every time he saw a sign that had the airport sign, he would hit me and give me a thumbs up. And there's a lot of signs between Auckland City and the airport. And I got to the top of the Mangere Bridge and I went, I've had enough. If he's going to hit me one more time, I'm going to stop. I'm going to push him off the Mangere Bridge. I'm going to chuck his stuff out of my boot over the bridge, and as he's looking at, watching it fall, I'll push him off. And then while she's watching him fall, I'll push her off. And then I started laughing to myself, and I thought, this is exactly what I asked for. You know, I asked for the obsession to be removed from me. And it had. It had been done by way of service. You know, I had to look after somebody rather than looking after myself, because for me, happiness is the byproduct of being at service to somebody else. You know, 7 years down the track, I have a whole new life. Nothing resembles my old life. And as it's been said before, I encourage anyone just to give this a go. And if it doesn't work for you, then we'll refund your misery in full. So thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Andrew. Okay. This is Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and you've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air with the Spiritual Concepts Group here, and their meeting is at 8 o'clock Sunday morning in Roseneath, and the address is on the AA website, which is aa.org.nz. And if you get a meeting map, or meetings and print meetings lists, there's two ways to find it. There's also various apps and things you can use, or if you don't have the internet, you can ring 0800 229 6757 and, you know, have a chat with someone about AA and Alcoholics Anonymous. So thanks everyone today for the meeting. What we'll do is, before we close with the Serenity Prayers, I'll read a little bit from page 55, which is what the Spiritual Concepts meeting does. So this is a little excerpt from page 55 of the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves, and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. All right, so what we'll do is we'll close with the serenity prayer, shall we?
Yes.
God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding the Access Internet Radio Project.